This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time now for Green Thumbs in Canterbury, out and about with the Canterbury Horticultural Society.
Lorraine from Canterbury Horticultural Society. The Green Thumbs have been out and about in Canterbury again this month.
We have, haven't we?
We sure have.
Yes, and it's been a really warm month, hasn't it? With the warmer days and nights here, and the plants are loving it.
Yes, but they're not liking the wind, are they?
No, they're not liking the wind.
No.
But everything is growing really well, but you really do have to keep up that watering.
You do.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's no good just sprinkling the water on.
No.
It's got to be
a good soaking.
Yes,
and preferably sort of in the morning before it gets too hot and not at night, so then they're going to be sitting in with wet leaves all night.
That's right. And that's where you get the mould and fungi and things.
That's right. Certain times you need to do that. But, the plants are really growing well. And I've really noticed the roses and pahutukawas around the place look amazing, don't they?
It's just absolutely gorgeous. You know, yes. The roses, the trouble is one day they're a bud and the next day they're a cabbage almost, aren't they? They're just opening so quickly.
They are, but I'm just amazed how awesome they look. And even my roses in the garden, which I really haven't had much luck with before, but they're looking awesome.
Yeah, I just wonder if it was a dry winter or...
Oh.
Yes, I don't know, but it's certainly the gardens that have been looked after look absolutely fabulous.
They are, aren't they? And the weather for the next 6 weeks is going to be a lot drier than normal, and the temperatures are going to be warmer, and so watering is, as we said, is essential.
And we don't want to waste water either, do we?
No.
I know that I occasionally go for walks around, and I see people put their hoses on, and they just leave them, and they're flooding the paths and the road, and that's just a waste, isn't it?
Just
our lovely, lovely water
just
pouring out. So really, you've got to keep your eye on it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. But the thing is, though, with all these, with the warm temperatures and that, there's going to be pests that we need to treat now so that the problem isn't going to be overwhelming later on.
That's right.
Yeah,
because there's white fly around already.
Yes, there is.
Have you noticed?
I have. And so also checking for grass grub and the codling moth and thrips, and so all those wonderful little things that come along to eat our produce in the garden.
And look, we don't like spraying because we cannot kill the bees the way that we have in the past.
No.
And all these things can be treated with, you know, an organic spray. But organic sprays can still injure the insects, the beneficial ones. So it's always best to spray once the bees have gone to bed at night. I mean, the bees all go to bed once a temperature drops to a certain temperature, and then you can spray. And I know that people think, oh, it's after dinner and I've got a full tummy and I don't feel like going out. But, you know, we've got to keep those bees and those other beneficial insects. Otherwise, we've a lost world.
That's right. If we haven't got the bees, we'll be lost, won't we, for
sure? Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Oh, this week we've been busy, haven't we? You've been talking to?
Kelly Perizzolo.
Yeah, and what was Kelly talking about?
He was talking about keeping your garden over the summer holidays, you know, things that you can do.
That
sort of thing.
Yeah, and I talked to Kerry Swanson, who's going to bring Microscope World to Christchurch in the kiosk in the Botanic Gardens for January, where children can go in and look at adults. Yes,
I'm looking forward to it myself.
With some interesting things with microscopes and 3D glasses. So it's something for children and parents to look forward to during January.
For sure.
This morning I'm talking to Kerry Swanson, who's with Microscope World. Now, Kerry, tell me about Microscope World.
It goes back a long way in the sense that when I worked at the university, was doing a lot of outreach for geology and formed a link with Neville Petrie, who was a the director of Science Alive, and so we started to work on a program which was really trying to use microscope images to get people interested in science, and that's now was pre the earthquakes when that started. So here we are 10 years down the track, and we're about to start.
Yeah. Well, that's great, because I'm looking forward to seeing this coming up. So you became involved with Neville, but what are your plans for Microscope World for, say, the future? Like, what, Neville's away at the moment doing something different, so...
Ultimately, the aim would be to have the whole show in all sorts of centres, both in New Zealand and overseas. Yesterday I had some interest from America, so there's a possibility that the show would go there as well. It's all about 3D imaging, and it's all about people looking at things that in a different way, things from normal everyday life and nature. That's what we're doing, really, presenting things in a different way.
From what I can understand, any children who come will be thinking of Jurassic Park and all sorts of quite interesting things.
Most of the things that they will see would be microscopic, so they're very small organisms or parts of organisms that they wouldn't have seen before. So insects, parts of plants, internal parts of plants. And then we've also imaged everyday items, and this is using microscopes, presenting those in a way that you wouldn't see before as well. I pride myself on making images that look pictorial rather than scientific, so they are interesting images. That's the first thing that I have to do.
Yeah, so have you got sort of plates that people look through, or?
So the images, the 3D images, will all be on a big screen, and you'll be presented with 3D glasses to look at those images. And then on the side tables, we'll have microscopes that will be operating. And so we're going to take samples from the pond by the kiosk. And those, you'll be able to see what's actually living in the pond, water, alive. That's those. So we'll have 8 microscopes operating. And these are high-end microscopes. They're research microscopes, not standard sort of microscopes that a child might have. And so we'll have 8 people looking down those at a time.
Oh, great. So where did these microscopes all come from?
So the ones that I'm using are from the Cotter Medical History Trust. And it's, as the name implies, a medical trust. And they are basically collecting artifacts associated with medicine and have been since the 1940s. And all of those materials are stored in a... it's not a museum because there's no public access. But included in that are nearly 300 microscopes. The oldest one is 1735. It's genuine 1735. And my job has been to go through that collection, to catalogue them, and then to get them going. And so the ones that I'll bring here are ones that I've got going again, but they're not that old. They're 1960s and 1970s. The old ones are far too valuable, but they're beautiful things.
Yeah.
Beautiful things.
What's the difference between old ones and new? In what sort of difference way, you know, are there in them?
So that in principle, they all work exactly the same way. So the microscopes that we're using on the table are optical, so they use normal light. And that idea of using normal light to view things and magnify things goes back to mid-1650. And believe it or not, a Dutchman whose name was Van Leeuwenhoek in 1650, he had a small microscope, and we'll have one on display, and he actually saw bacteria. And so that's, 400 years ago. Quite remarkable, really, but using the same idea. But his microscope was simple, so it only had one lens. And then the microscopes we'll be using have 2 main lenses, and that's why they have higher magnification. But the 3D images, they're all taken on electron microscopes. And so they're higher resolution, much higher resolution than we can get on an optical microscope. So the microscope that I used at the university, if it's working fine and the materials that you're looking at working fine, it will go to 500,000 times magnification.
Goodness me, so anyone who's going to be looking at some of these things is going to get quite a picture to look at.
Yes, I think the highest magnification we'll see for the 3D images is probably 15,000 maybe. And the microscopes I use on the table, we'll only be looking at maybe 200 or 300 times, but that's enough to see the microscopic life that's living in the pond.
That's amazing. I would hate to think about looking at my wrinkles through something like that. It would be quite scary, wouldn't it?
Look at one of my teeth that I had pulled out. And that wasn't great, I have to say.
Yes, I don't think there's some things in life you don't need to look at too closely, are there? Oh, dear. Oh, well, this is going to be... I suppose I'm going to ask you, when's it happening? But I was going to also say, how many microscopes are you going to have here altogether?
So we'll have 8 operating on the table. So there'll be 4 microscopes on each table, and there'll be 4. So that's 8 people who can look down the microscope at the same time. Obviously, we're going to have to limit the amount of time that someone can sit at the microscope. But the two tables will be different types of microscopes. So one will be looking at larger material from the lake, and the other one will be looking at the real small stuff, which are single-celled organisms that are living in the pond.
Yeah. So now you mentioned 3D glasses. Now, I know that kids especially love 3D glasses, and I must admit I'm a bit of a fan sometimes too. So how's that all going to work?
So when you come to the door, you'll be given 3D glasses and a little notebook, which will give you sort of an indication of what to expect when you come inside. There'll be 3D prints as well, so you could just watch those, and then there will be 3 separate programs on monitors, and each one of those programs are different. So one's about plants, the other one is about just small parts of living organisms in general, and then the other one is everyday items in a different way, which is looking at things through a microscope. So things like a halogen light bulb or a spring or whatever, just presenting those in a way that you would never have thought they could possibly look. Mm-hmm. And that's just showing what a microscope can do, really.
Well, that's a great opportunity for children, and I guess their parents will just love it.
Yes. We sort of think that the main screen is more directed towards parents, so we will have seats in front of those. So whilst the kids are being entertained at the tables on the real microscopes, we're just thinking that the parents can watch the 3D imaging roll through. One of them is actually, it's a like a quiz. You will be asked a question about the image, and then the answers will be given in the next image. Not unlike what you'd experience on an aircraft when you're flying, like Air New Zealand, for instance.
Air New Zealand? Flying? Where?
Hopefully they're bringing people here.
Well, I mean, nobody can leave the country, so we should have plenty of people around the gardens, and hopefully we'll get plenty of people through because it's going to be so interesting.
Yes. After a career in using microscopes, I'm still absolutely fascinated by microscopes, and I just feel so fortunate in retirement. I finished up at the trust working on microscopes again, and they even have antique slides which go back to the early 1800s, sometimes late 1700s, and to think that someone made those slides for exactly the same purpose that I make slides here, 2021. Just amazing. Fantastic.
You see the Cotter Medical Museum. Where is that exactly?
It's at Hillmorton Hospital, and they're basically, it's an area, it's not a public access museum. It's simply a facility to store a growing collection of medical memorabilia, and the library, which has 25,000 books in it. It's huge. And so at some time in the future, we just hope that the Cotter Museum will be an event, will be a thing, and it's fascinating, the stuff they've got. Unbelievably good.
Yeah. I imagine it's open for research, though. Like, students must be able to use it, do they?
Yes, and they have small groups coming through, but you have to make an appointment to do that because somebody would have to escort you through. There are some materials on display. There are cases, cabinets that are full of stuff. Microscopes, for instance. Another cabinet's full of medical equipment from World War One. So it goes back a long, long way. Wonderful stuff.
Well, where is this going to be? How much is it going to cost? And how sort of is it all going to work?
We're going to be in the kiosk in the gardens from, we open on the 2nd of January and we go pretty much through to the end of January. We're open from 9 till 4 each day. Entry fee is $6 per person or $20 for a family. And for that, you'll not only get the 3D glasses, but you'd also get a little notebook as well. And then once you get inside, it's pretty well free form. You basically decide which part of the show you want to have a look at. There's no time restriction other than the fact that clearly we couldn't have people sitting at the table for any hours. It would have to be only a few minutes and then we'll have to move them along. But depending on how many people are in the kiosk at the time, really. So we're ready to go.
And I guess we have to still consider the COVID-19 to try to do the distancing anyway, don't we?
Tables would certainly be, they will be set aside, there'll be a metre between each, only four per table, which are really big tables, and they will be supervised as well. I mean, that's simply because the microscopes are relatively valuable, and if they're bumped in any way, then they go out of adjustment, so we'll have trained people who will be able to quickly get it going should the thing fail.
That's great, Kerry, and it's a wonderful thing for people. And just quickly for people listening in, if you do have one of those passports for the Children's University, this is an opportunity to come along and get a stamp. Kerry's already been briefed on it, so that'll be great. So, Kerry, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to coming along.
Pleasure. We're looking forward to getting it set up, and it's been a long time, sort of 10 years in the making, but finally I think we're ready to go.
Fantastic.
Good morning. We are talking to Kelly Perizzolo today about the Fruit and Veggie Circle, who is part of the Canterbury Horticultural Society. Tell us, Kelly, what does the Fruit and Veggie Circle do?
Well, we are a very diverse group of people with knowledge around fruit and veggie growing. We meet about 9 times a year, and it's quite a broad group as far as knowledge. We have different speakers that come along on different topics. This might be something like how to grow your strawberries, or something such as how to identify mushrooms in the wild and how to grow your own. So it's quite interesting.
So who can come along to the meetings, Kelly?
Oh, look, it's open to the public. There is a small donation to enter. If you're a member of the public, but if you're a member, it's free, and it's on a Wednesday night at 7:30. The meetings are not very long; they're about 60 minutes. We usually have supper afterwards. A couple of times a year, we go and have a barbecue or have a dinner, and sometimes we'll go to a venue such as a community garden and do a walk around, so we can see what other community groups are doing. So it's quite interesting.
Sounds really good. And so the people can come along to learn a little bit about certain things like how to grow potatoes well or something like that.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing we do have along with the different speakers is we have a Q&A session where some people may have different questions on different issues that might have in the garden. The other thing we might do is if somebody's got a project they want to showcase, they might do that. They might bring a PowerPoint along, or they might just bring some produce to show. So it's quite good. And again, depending on the season, we'll discuss different things that we are growing in our garden. And the members have different properties as far as lifestyle blocks or small places. So there's different options as to what we can discuss, and some people might be starting off, some people have been doing it for 50 years, so it's quite a broad range of knowledge.
Sounds good. I think knowledge is a key thing for gardening, because the more I find, the more I do it, the more I learn, you know, sometimes by my mistakes, but yeah, knowledge is a really good thing for gardening, isn't it?
Absolutely. And obviously I'm younger than some people, and obviously my knowledge is somewhat limited compared to some other people, and I find that speaking to people and visiting their properties helps me to, you know, do better in my garden. And my wife really enjoys it. She's got a complete plan now as to how to grow different things throughout the year. So that's great.
Cool. That sounds really good. And so what would the fruit and veggie circle recommend to do for your gardens over the holidays? Maybe if you haven't got a friendly neighbour to water your gardens, or that you can get cheap watering systems these days. Mm-hmm. But is there any, and mulching is a good thing too, but maybe you've got some other things that people could do for their gardens if they're lucky enough to go away over Christmas?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think those things that you mentioned are really good, especially mulching. It looks like we're going to have a really dry summer, and likely we're going to have water restrictions. Mm-hmm. So mulching, using timers, having a self-watering system, knowing when you're using the water, not you don't do it at 12 o'clock during the day, do it maybe early in the morning or late at night so the water can absorb in the ground and not evaporate. That's a good tip. I think water is going to be an issue going forward, so that's an area that we probably would recommend looking into. Mm-hmm. As far as how you manage the watering of your garden and how you use less water to have the same result, basically.
Yes, watering will be a big thing, I think, won't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Kelly, so maybe you could tell us, Pirazzolo, which country is that from, Kelly?
So I was born and raised in Venice, that's why the surname Pirazzolo. My mum is from Greymouth. I was there for 20 years. Actually, that's my knowledge of fruit and veggies started off. My parents run a restaurant in Venice, and most of the produce that they grow in their own garden goes to the restaurant. So I sort of grew up with that around me. So I guess my knowledge, or my limited knowledge, and my interest started from that point. So it's quite good. And I was very, very lucky to grow up in the countryside. So I had quite a bit of space when I was young to play. And I came here about 17 years ago. So very good.
Mm. So did you have your own veggie garden when you were a child, or did you just help mum and dad?
I think I helped my dad with the lawn, and that was probably about it. But obviously, my dad being a chef, he would use most of the produce from our garden. Mm. So it was really interesting to see what he was able to do, with a meal. And it's something that stayed with me. I cook most of my meals from scratch. So I guess that's something that's quite valuable to have.
Yes, lovely when you can cook a meal from scratch. Just tastes so much better, doesn't it?
Absolutely. There's nothing like it. And, when you grow your own veggies, you get a really rewarding feeling that you've done something yourself, and then you know what you've used, you know what you've sprayed, etc. So to have that, that knowledge, and having done that, it's really rewarding, I think.
Yes, it's nothing better than picking something out the garden and coming in and putting it in your meal. Totally agree.
Absolutely.
Okay, Kelly, so thank you very much for giving us that interesting recommendation. So with the fruit and veggie circle, there won't be any more for the year, but this, they can start back. It starts back in February, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. So we meet on the last Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. We meet at the kiosk in the Botanical Gardens. More information will be on the CHS website, but the speakers are usually listed there early on in the year. So there'll be information in the newsletter as well. So, everything will be listed there.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Another year has gone by. Wow. We've been, it just seems to fly, doesn't it? I know that everybody said that, but it's just been another really interesting year in the garden.
Well, an interesting year, totally, hasn't it? Yeah, but, and in the garden.
And it was so lovely to have the garden during lockdown. Was a blessing, wasn't it?
It sure was.
It was. Yes. Well, for the folks out there, we just wish you a very, very Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year.
Yes.
And keep going in the garden, because that's, after all, what life's about in the end.
And enjoying your garden and what it brings.
And peace.
And sitting out in it and watching the birds or whatever in your garden.
So absolutely right. It's the time of year to actually enjoy your garden.
It is, for sure.
Sit in it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Any questions from anybody, don't forget, you can send in questions to info@plainsfm.org.nz or give the office a call and talk to the lovely Kate on 365 7997. All the best for the next year.
Yes.